Communities burdened by environmental racism face higher rates of cancer, chronic illness, and premature death from toxic pollution and extreme heat from climate crisis. For 38 years, We Act for Environmental Justice has been empowering frontline community members to fight for strong environmental health and protection policies to build cleaner and healthier communities. This spring, you can deepen your commitment to this fight by becoming a We Act sustainer. Our sustainers support our community organizing work, help push legislation over the finish line, and ensure we meet our long-term climate goals. With just $50, $25, or even $10 a month, you can make a lasting impact on We Act's efforts in 2026 and beyond. Donors who sign up today at $25 a month or more will get a shout out on this podcast. Go to weact.org/donate and select Uptown Chats in the drop-down box to start your monthly gift today. Thank you so much for your support.
Welcome to Uptown Chats, a podcast where we share stories about environmental justice by and for everyday people. I'm your co-host, Jaren, and today, Lonnie's out on vacation, but we've still got a great episode for you. In fact, this will be the second part of our conversation with Kiana McCann from Climate with Kiana. In our previous episode, we spoke with Kiana about her experience supporting solar projects in New York City, heard some of her thoughts about the landscape of solar energy in this current moment in time, and eventually got into our main topic of discussion, unpacking how climate and environmental justice show up in pop culture and media. Before we jump back into our conversation with Kiana, I want to quickly share WEAC's mission. WEAC's mission is to build healthy communities by ensuring that people of color and or low-income residents participate meaningfully in the creation of sound and fair environmental health and protection policies and practices. With that said, let's pick back up where we left off and hear more about how climate and environmental justice show up in pop culture and media, including some specific examples that we thought were worth sharing. Enjoy.
I think there are a lot of incredible environmental stories in film and media, particularly documentaries and otherwise, but I think it is more limited when it comes to environmental justice. Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to chat about that a bit. But yeah, I'll pass it to one of you, maybe just share media that's impacted you or been important.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you talk about like kind of people's connection becomes like a documentary that is extremely has a it was before documentaries kind of changed in how they were. I'm thinking about like the Michael Moores and the, you know, Sicko and like those kind of documentaries where it kind of changed a little bit, became more shock factor than anything else, or Super Size Me, or those are the kind of things that you would watch in school. It's like, oh, this is a cool different type of documentary. I think a lot of it became like was very like Planet Earth and watching things about space and then learning about certain things where I feel like it became like a very almost like factual, here's what's happening, here's the thing. And you know, there's not much entertainment in that. It, depending on what kind of person you are, gotta be a nerd to really be into the entertainment aspect of like a documentary. But it's really important. I think it's nice to see kind of when you think about climate and environmental things, to see it kind of almost on our everyday things that we watch and see or consume. And I'm always curious about like when I just working in this space where it just pops up and you're like, that was an environmental or climate reference, or maybe whether it be small or something that's there. And I think a lot of it's really important talking about that, because we talked a little bit about what was going on and some of the gloom and doom that goes on citing how it shapes how people think. And I think narrative is extremely important in policymaking and politics. It's who controls the narrative, kind of decides who decides they hate windmills for no reason. And then it's like, why do you hate them? It's because there's we did get you started. We might come back and have to finish that conversation. But it's the idea of like, oh, this is the narrative that is being built. And this is what, you know, our whole conversation about CLCPA rollbacks and like this narrative that clean energy is going to make things more expensive, or this transition is going to make things more expensive. And people latch onto a narrative. And when you say something enough, or when people hear things enough, they start to believe it. So I think that's where it becomes extremely powerful to tell those stories that are true, first of all, because that narrative was completely false. But also showing people, I think the more positive aspects of what you get out of it. And like even just sharing stories of, if you were to share stories about farmers and how that impacts their work and, you know, the agriculture mixed with how solar and how that kind of connects, that's a different story than what you may hear when it comes to federal rollbacks or state rollbacks on these kind of things.
Absolutely. I think narrative is critical when it comes to policy and when it comes to, you know, voting and how people choose to vote, right? Mm-hmm. Like what narratives are they hearing? And unfortunately, the fossil fuel industry pours so much money into trying to shape the narrative. And in many ways, they are successful. Like the example of a lot of the falsehoods about wind turbines, they say, oh, like it kills so many birds. Air pollution from the burning of fossil fuels kills more birds than wind turbines ever had. You know, like mm-hmm. just all these just false narratives that get perpetuated. So we really need to counter that with narratives about what's actually happening. I was at actually a climate film event last night, and there was a panel, and man, I'm forgetting who said this on the panel, so I'm sorry. But someone said that if someone has a story set in current day times and climate change isn't a part of it, that's science fiction. Mm. Oh. And I was like, that's an interesting reframe.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's so... Yeah, I mean, these are the times we're living in, and how are we addressing that in stories, both fictional and nonfiction,
yeah.
right? Like, both important medias to get people thinking about what's going on and how we're addressing it.
And I've also seen, like, I feel like when we talk about climate and environmental justice in that space, kind of to Jaren's kind of original kind of question about pop culture and how it shows up, I always think it's always apocalyptic or dystopian, or like somewhere set in a future where there is a lot of things going on, where there's like, you know, all these kind of crazy inventions and new things going on, but it's always set in some type of extreme future instead of, you know, just being like you just said, this right now. We're experiencing what we're experiencing right now, and it's always like a big event or something that has happened in the future, and here we are in this place and we have to figure something out. And I always thought that was an interesting way of always approaching climate, or like whether it be Day After Tomorrow, right? Where
it's the same movie I was thinking about. Yeah. I'm so glad that you said that.
I feel like someone brought that up in an episode of my podcast previously that came up. Yeah. I mean, with AI right now, it does feel like, with AI and the rise of authoritarianism, it feels like we're living in the sci-fi novel. Like there's so many stories where I'm like, yeah, that feels like what's happening. But I know you wanted to talk about extrapolations. I feel like that's a good example of a really interesting show. I think I've watched most of it, not all of it, but
yeah, I started it because I watched like the first half of it. It's like an anthology series.
Yes.
And it is fully set on climate and environmental justice, but it's set in the future. I mean, it starts with a near future, but I think it's now near future. It's like 2037 or something like that. And basically, we've passed some thresholds when it comes to the rising temperatures, global rising temperatures, and we're approaching two degrees Celsius as a rise. And basically, there's fires everywhere. Air quality is horrible. Water is scarce. There's droughts everywhere. It's just basically very catastrophic, but there are still activists who are climate activists who are still protesting kind of COP. And you have this notion, idea that there are wealthy people who can escape these things, but there's people who are extracting them, extracting from, to continue to extract regardless of what's going on with the climate. And I just feel like that is kind of where I was thinking about too, as well as like this catastrophizing of the climate and environmental kind of experience, I guess you could say. But yeah, I don't know if there's anyone who wants to say more about that.
I guess to that point, to me, it brings up a question, like to the point you made earlier, Lonnie, about like in the media that we see most commonly, it's like it's either the framing of climate change is either dystopian of like these are all the bad things that are happening, or like set far off as like a sci-fi future of like, oh, we've solved it. But like very rarely in the like the moment of like us doing the thing, or like making it feel like, no, this is something that's happening in our world right now. And the question I'm stuck with is like, why is that? Like what is our, I guess, discomfort, or I guess of avoidance of that, like kind of, where do you think that stems from, like in media? Is it too touchy of a subject? Is it something that like is, because I think that's where we're missing an opportunity to maybe see that narrative shaped a little bit more, because people are too stuck in, oh, well, it's apocalyptic, and I don't want to think about climate change because it makes me depressed, to your point earlier. Or if it's right. Sci-fi, that's so far future. Like, we're not, that technology doesn't even exist. Like, it's, to your point, shaping that narrative in a way, like...
Almost as like the climate crisis is science fiction. It kind of like gives that vibe. Sometimes it's like, well, you know, that's crazy. All these fires, that's not going to happen. But then yet we had wildfires that impacted New York City, which I don't think most people who've ever lived here have ever experienced wildfire smoke and things like that. So it's like, no, it's happening now, but there's like a discomfort, as Jaren was saying, with accepting that, yeah, this is happening now.
Absolutely. I think sci-fi or cli-fi, as we now call mm-hmm. it, climate cli-fi. Science fiction.
New yeah. genre, baby. New cli-fi, genre.
Baby. Let's nerd out. I think, you know, there's Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower and Talents. There's been a lot of references to that in the last few years. Mm-hmm. To me, what we're seeing is that science fiction novels from the last many decades, I think, have been just a reflection of authors looking at the state of the world and saying, what will happen mm-hmm. if we continue on this path and in this direction, right? Sure. Of all of these values and interests held by governments and corporations that fundamentally harm all of us. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a picture of the fact that, like, this has kind of all been a long time coming. Like, mm-hmm. science fiction is proof that, like, you can look and see the direction we're going. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. we've, like, gone really far in the wrong direction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shout out to your series, The Wrong Direction.
Thank you. Wow, we even have to make these plugs. And you're welcome on the podcast anytime. You want to make our plugs for us?
That's a good plug. Wrong Direction.
Great series. But, yeah, like, you know, it's kind of like a 1+1=2 situation, in that we've been doing, like, with climate change, right? Yeah. We've been burning fossil fuels for, this is what has happened, with, because there hasn't been sufficient change. Mm-hmm. This is the direction that governments have been going to, just valuing money and growth at all costs above human lives. And mm-hmm. this is the result. I'm not saying it's, so yes, we are living in the sci-fi novel is part of my, okay, wait, I had another thought.
Part of your thesis?
Yeah, part of my thought is, yes, we are in the sci-fi novel.
But we're not learning from it. Like, it's like, there's like a warning piece here.
It's like, right. We've been hearing this message for like decades of like, this is what's going to happen if you don't do the thing. But then we just hear the, this is what's going to happen. And then we stop listening.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think there's so many comparisons you can make. But like, you know, all the things you're supposed to do to be healthy. Mm. Is everyone like eating less sugar, exercising every day, getting enough sleep? Probably not. I mean, some people more than others. I think the comparison of it, I feel like the health of the human body and the health of the earth, right? It's not, you can't just like slap a Band-Aid on something. It's like, how are you taking care of something over the long term?
Sure.
And we haven't been respecting and protecting our planet and our communities. Mm-hmm. But, oh, okay. I remember what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. You were making the point about that these stories and sci-fi novels and movies feel like really set far in the future and remove are so dramatic. And like, yeah, Extrapolations is really dark. I feel like they do a good job of like the geopolitical situation. Yes. I think there's a lot of really interesting things in it, and it's dark and maybe hard to watch at times.
Yeah, a lot of conversation, a lot of geopolitics that play in a role.
But I, while you were describing that, two films, which were not on my list for this conversation, came to mind, which are more set in the current times, and they're both about eco-terrorism.
Which says a lot.
Yeah, right? That, like, the films that are maybe seem more of the moment is, like, people just feeling so deeply desperate. Mm-hmm. One is How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which I'm sure you've seen or read.
Yes.
So interesting. I mean, interesting adaptation, too, from the novel, which is the book, which is not a novel. It's more theory. Mm-hmm. And then they made it into a storyline. And then this other one is real niche. I haven't encountered anyone else who had also seen or heard of this film. But it's called Woman at War. Mm-hmm. And it's an Icelandic scripted film about a woman doing eco-terrorism in Iceland. She's sabotaging utility infrastructure, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, kind of ironic because Iceland is like primarily geothermal energy. Mm-hmm. Like, they have an extremely clean grid. Mm-hmm. Although it's not, most of that is just because economic, once again.
Sure.
Yeah.
Economically makes sense. Benefit that it's clean. Also, most of it is like actually powering international industry such as aluminum smelting, since it's so cheap on the grid there. But neither here nor there. The point being, this woman in the film is sabotaging utility infrastructure as a statement against the fossil fuel industry. And it's like very surrealistic. And there's also sort of a commentary on migration and like what it means to be a parent in an age of climate change. Interesting film. And the eco-terrorism is kind of entertaining. She like is disguising herself as a sheep. And like bow and arrow to the power lines. It's kind of a fun watch.
Princess Mononoke.
Yes. Love Princess Mononoke. I feel like that film shaped my childhood. And
we're just throwing out references here.
But I don't know. Do I think eco-terrorism is the answer? No, I do not endorse eco-terrorism if that needed to be said.
Sure.
But it's very interesting in these stories. But
which I think what's frustrating about the kind of eco-terrorism that kind of narrative out there, it makes it seem as if like people don't want to, most people don't respond positively to eco-terrorism, right? Sure. And it just, then it creates a piece of a narrative about the movement that becomes what people see. It's like, these are some crazy climate activists and they just want to blow things up. And like, this is dangerous. And this is why we should not support renewable. Like the path that people go down to just not do something or not to be a part of like something that makes sense, like a movement, is very simple. For it doesn't take much. Mm-hmm. I don't think for people, that's why I think it's really important that when people try to control a narrative or try to have some type of say or pushing something out there that's actually correct and factual, because it doesn't take long for someone to be like, well, don't need this and don't need solar anymore because these eco-terrorists are out here and they're crazy and then we're connecting this to this. Like it becomes such a short distance to denial.
Yeah. See, what we need instead, grounded in the more of the current moment, we need a How to Work at WEACT movie. Let's just do how to do the regular, somewhat mundane day to day of like fighting, you know, or like promoting policies and like no destruction, no physical eco-terrorism needed. Just doing the day to day hard work of like advancing policy. And this actually gets me back to a point you were making earlier, Hiana, about these messages, this sci-fi message that we've been telling, you know, for a long time, and like the comparison you made between like the human body and, you know, and Earth and climate issues of like, I think it's almost the same pitfall that we fall into with like movies that talk about health and about, you know, lifestyle changes. It's like the blame gets put on the individual. The onus gets put on the individual of like, you need to change these things. You need to change your diet. And like the same, I think people internalize that in a lot of ways for climate too. It's like, I need to change my entire lifestyle to no longer use energy or like be totally like net zero. It's like, sure, but the bigger message is we need to change our systems. We need to change our policies. And like, that's the thing, that's the disconnect. Where it's like, having these messages that we've been receiving for a long time, and it's been heard by some people, but it hasn't been heard by the right people to know that we need to implement these policies to change our system so that we can all benefit. It's not just like you as an individual, you need to change your whole life and do all these things. It's like, that's great, but we need to either absorb that message and think of it differently. Like, oh, I need to vote differently and get the right people in office that can help enact policies and not just think about like, oh, I need to change my individual lifestyle. And I feel like that's maybe part of where that disconnect is happening too, or like where some part of that issue is too.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I see that in the policy world as well, as it's the understanding what you can do as an individual versus what systems exist that's either stop you from changing your behavior or also what just contribute to the bigger problem. Like sometimes it's not always, again, this is a whole other episode, maybe a whole different person, but like when people talk about things like, yes, you should separate your waste. Yes, you should recycle at the level that you are doing it, right? That's exactly what you should be doing. And that's okay to have that message. But there's also an entire system that is created that is a waste system that needs to be altered as well. It's not just you doing this thing and it's supposed to change something. It's like the system that has to change itself. But that's a really good point, too.
I mean, absolutely. I totally agree. I do have many bins in my apartment, but I also know that recycling is sort of broken on a fundamental level.
Yeah, it's broken.
Yeah.
And it's an environmental justice issue because so much of it is getting like shipped to Asia. And
for sure.
Yeah. But you don't stop doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing at home level. But
Yeah, I do. I agree with everything you were saying about the systems are setting us up to fail in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially in this country at this moment, when what's happening federally and on that level, I think always a lot of the solutions are in our local level communities. And mm-hmm. we just like really need to lean into those networks of support, which is why mm-hmm. once again, what WEACT is doing is so wonderful and important. You have such a lovely membership base here that it's like you're doing the work on that larger federal level and you also have that local community. I think all different kinds of community of mutual aid and support and in policy, like this is just critical because that's mm-hmm. how we're going to support each other to like get where we need to go. Yeah, kind of going back to what we were saying about eco-terrorism, it also sort of made me think of like the example of that the climate activists like throwing soup on paintings. And I think, yeah, you know, like, look.
how quickly we forget about these things.
I think that, you know, from their perspective, these disruptions are very small compared to the scale that climate is disrupting, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And that makes me think of, like, once again, this role of, like, what is the role of civil disobedience and disruption mm-hmm. to sort of, like, wake people up? And it's hard right now because I think we're facing so many compounding crises and issues and attacks on all front that, like, I think people are exhausted and have like sometimes mm-hmm. limited capacity to like fight all of these battles at once, yeah. which is also once again, appreciate WEACT helping like channel into very specific actions you can take in yeah. your local community. Mm-hmm. But I think like, as I'm thinking about narratives and storytelling and how this is like critical for environmental justice and like making progress, this is a generational fight and it's not linear. Like there's ups and downs, right? Like the work of environmental rights, civil rights, human rights have been going on for generations. And mm-hmm. I think that has involved, in the most extreme cases, war to accomplish mm-hmm. some of these like mm-hmm. larger human rights issues and civil rights issues. And definitely like disruption from protest. And, you know, it's not linear. There's ups and downs. And how do we learn from the knowledge and wisdom of our elders in this movement of environmental justice? And I mean, right now, when sort of like human rights and healthcare, right, women's rights are under attack on so many areas. And it truly feels like the right to have clean water, clean air, yeah. healthy environment, which mm-hmm. should be like a no-brainer nonpartisan issue, has been lost. But I think that knowing it's a generational fight also gives me hope, because it's like we are not the first people to care and be engaged in this work, nor will we be the last. This mm-hmm. work will continue probably beyond our lifetime, because somehow there's always something that needs mm-hmm. protecting from someone. Someone's always true. Out to exploit people and earth for whatever unfortunate reason. And I think that like the narratives and storytelling around what's happening is just like critical to allow us to humanize and empathize with each other in like different areas of this work and experiencing the same issues in different ways in different communities. And how do we connect with each other within a city, within a country, to globally, right? Because mm-hmm. you see these environmental and climate justice stories happening sort of on all levels. And I think we need these stories to educate and share critical information with each other, especially like when even education and public media is under attack. Like, how do we mm-hmm. democratize access to stories of what's actually happening, and shaping these cultural narratives? I think that also can empower people to fight back, right? Mm-hmm. Feeling like you're not alone in this work. And I also think that storytelling and environmental narratives shape like collective and generational identities. Think about how like generationally we're shaped by like certain media that like everyone mm-hmm. had access to. True. And then it means something yeah. to you. It shapes your perspective. It's a reference. I think that happens environmentally too. Mm-hmm. And so like, what are kind of the touchstones of, I don't know, our generation or this moment mm-hmm. Environmentally, and how will that continue to evolve and change? What will people look back on from what we create in this time? Mm-hmm. And how will that shape the understanding of what's happening?
Yeah. Well, with that, I know that we're nearing the end of our time. So first, before I ask the last question that I have, I feel like we've touched on a lot of different things, and I'm sure you had some things that you wanted to cover. And I apologize to our listeners that I think we lied a little bit. We said this is going to be a lighter episode. To some extent, we got into the landscape of what's going on a little bit. But you know, I feel like we did a pretty good job. We kept it definitely lighter than we sometimes do. But all that said, before we start to close out, is there anything else? Any other, I guess, notes you wanted to add on this kind of topic of climate and environmental justice, media, pop culture, any final thoughts that you had before we start to wrap up?
I mean, I think I do have, somehow, against all odds, I still continue to have a hope.
Yeah.
Even in the dark times, I think hope is also something that you have to exercise and choose. And I think there's many smart, talented, amazing people working on both kind of on all levels, policy solutions, community organizing, storytelling. Like, the work mm-hmm. is all happening. And I think it's a question of how do we elevate that and bring it to people so that they can also share in the hope of seeing we have mm-hmm. solutions. There's ways you can get engaged even when it feels like the odds are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, crazy things have happened in history time and time again, and we've mm-hmm. somehow like gotten through them. I mean, it's like, at what cost? The cost seems pretty insane, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I do think we will be on the other side of this. And yeah, I mean, I'm grateful to both of you for sharing with your listeners kind of everything that's happening in the policy landscape and how you can engage in that. I think, you know, there's so much I could say, but I'm just, yeah, thank you for having me.
Maybe quickly and briefly, before we completely ended, do you want to talk a little bit about the concept of joy as resistance? I think, you know, to kind of maybe end that lighter note without it being too heavy, but the concept of using joy or having joy as resistance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it connects to what I was saying a bit before as well about, you know, having community and hope. And on my podcast, I try to always talk about, like, how do you find joy in this work? Because, like we were saying, the work is heavy, and especially like now there's been a lot of losses recently policy-wise that are tough to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a way to stay engaged, like finding joy in the work with others, keeps you going, because no one wants to be depressed all the time about all the bad environmental things happening. And I think you find joy, or for me, I'll say I find joy in community and mm-hmm. feeling inspired by people who are so passionate about helping others and furthering causes of environmental justice and energy justice. And also, we just need to like create spaces for environmental joy mm-hmm. To balance out the other work as well. Yeah. So I think it is a critical tool. And even like storytelling is also like a creative medium. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of a larger landscapes of the arts as resistance, right? Whether that's storytelling through film or, you know, music, visual arts, like there's
podcasting.
So many podcasting guys, which everyone loves and no one has a problem with. No one has ever said anything like, man, podcasting.
They just keep coming, though.
Yeah, look, I think what's great about podcasting is it it's a platform which anyone can access. Yeah.
Even us.
Even us with our credentials, whatever those are. Yeah, I mean, like, it allows more information to get out there, mm-hmm. sometimes for better or worse, depending on who is. There's a lot of, I mean, I think everyone's voice has power, whether that's on a podcast or even just in your own family or local mm-hmm. community. So I think we all have the power to enact change and take that seriously. Like, even if it seems small, it's all the small things do matter and add up. And like, you never know how you might inspire someone else with like a single sentence you say and what they'll go and do. Like, we're just, I think we're all so interconnected, and I get joy and hope from like how we can support each other. And I think WEACT has been doing this work for, you know, over 3 decades, and I think has been critical in shaping narratives around environmental justice in this country.
I can make a little plug for WEAC too. So for folks who are listening, and if you are part of the WEAC community directly or a member, we are always looking for people to tell their stories and how they're impacted by any of the things and topics that we touch on, whether it be on the podcast or things that we come to you guys when it comes to our policy work. It is extremely important to tell your story, because when you tell your story, that is actually how change happens. When a legislator, or we're talking someone who has decision-making power, when they can hear that a community member is impacted in a very specific way, it means so much more than me or Jaren or Kiana coming to them as experts to tell them about these things. They hear a bunch of from all these experts in these spaces, and they want to hear the stories on the ground and how people are actually impacted. So storytelling is extremely powerful.
It is. I remembered what I wanted to say. Great. Which is perfectly segueing off of what you just said. I think creative expression through the arts to further movements is critical. And like, why do you have so many constituents come and tell their stories to legislators? Because it's like truly stories that moves policy, mm-hmm. that moves the movement forward, right? Like, it's just a powerful and critical tool. And we need to utilize all the tools in our toolbox at this moment.
Yep,
absolutely.
Perfect.
Well, I can't think of a more action-oriented thing to end our conversation on. So Kiana, so happy that you joined us for this conversation. I wish that we had so much more time. We have so many more things. We'll have to have you back on the podcast again to dive into some of these topics that we've alluded to in passing. But again, thank you. And we'll make sure to include links in the show notes for your podcast for folks that want to check that out and any of the things that we mentioned today during the episode. But yes. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure. Appreciate you both.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to rate and review the show on whatever platform you listen on. If you have thoughts about the show or suggestions for topics you want us to discuss, we encourage you to reach out to us at podcast@weact.org. I also want to remind folks about our Uptown Chats hotline, where listeners can call in with questions they have about climate and environmental justice. Got a question? Call 877-UPTOWN-6. That's 877-878-6966. And of course, check out WEAC on Facebook at WEAC4EJ. That's WEACTFOREJ. On Instagram, Blue Sky, and YouTube at WEAC4EJ. That's WEACT4EJ. And check out our website, weact.org, for more information about environmental justice. Until next time.